to live my life in every part in order to please my Father's heart.
Leva mitt liv av slik en hot. Jeg kan veit til fei med en gled.
But how do you do it? How do you please the Father's heart?
Hvordan gleder til fei hjerte?
You see, at the end of your life, that's going to be the test.
Vi enden av livet til åkken for til å være rønden.
You don't take anything with you. I don't know if you have a bank of the Faroe Islands or a bank of Denmark here, but certainly you have some banks. But not one of them has got a branch in heaven. So how do you send it on ahead? Listen to a little verse in Isaiah in chapter
58.
I was thinking of this verse when listening to that beautiful song, where reference is made, can you get the verse number there? Reference is made to sending your righteousness on before you. Isaiah 58.
Ta skal ljós tvitt renna upp som morgun røyken. Ta skal sart henne kjøtt vera grøtt. Rattvise tøyn, han sier bara til, rattvise tøyn skal genga fyrir tær og durd herrans attast vi fyrir leie tøyn.
The earlier verse says, when you see the naked to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood, then your light will break forth like the dawn, your healing will quickly appear, then your righteousness will go before you.
Verse from undan, som vi hesa versen, sier, ta det gjerne svenga borsa breietun, en hus og heimleisun, neier du, en klær hin nakna, du sarsht, og vende til ikke bætje, som et ekne hold, ta skal ljós, tuitt renne opp som morgerøyen.
So what does it mean for your righteousness to go before you?
So
let me tell you about the richest poor man I ever met. I flew to Calcutta about a year ago to take his funeral. He was as well known in Bengal as Mother Teresa.
Han var lika känd I Bengal som Mor Teresa.
He died prematurely in America trying to raise money for boys and girls.
Han dog nog så tulja, då är han tulja nu medan Amerika och runt att skaffa pengar till drunkar och gentter.
He had some heart surgery in Maryland.
Och han hade haft en hjärtoperation I Maryland.
And because the United States health bills are very expensive, I thought that he would cripple our charity. The bill was going to come to something like
$140,000.
But I understood that the hospital where we put him had got a Catholic foundation historically.
Men jag visste att hospitalet här som han var, eller fick vittjer, hade en bakgrund från katolicismen, eller katolska bakgrund.
And this man, like myself, knew Mother Teresa.
Och här som är en som är själv, kände jag sin Mother Teresa.
And I wrote them a letter and I said this.
Och jag skrev en brev och säger att
although your surgery was not successful, you have probably had the richest poor man who ever darken the door of your hospital.
So how did the hospital have the richest father man in the hospital?
I said, if you honor Mother Teresa at all, maybe you'll tear up the bill.
So how did this scream about rockness and something?
Because this man has done exactly what she had done. And they did just that. They cancelled the bill. And I flew to Calcutta.
And
in typically Indian fashion, his body was exposed in a church building.
The
Central Assemblies of God in Calcutta. There were flowers around the open coffin. Hindu came in, Muslim came in. Street children came in. For 24 hours the church was open. And the following day we conducted his memorial service, his funeral service. And I thought to myself as I was preaching of that verse in the book of Numbers, which says, "Let me die the death of this man, and let my end be like his." Because I was looking at a man who had impacted society in a way that few people had ever done. And this is how I interpret this particular verse of scripture. Your righteousness going before you. He'd gone into the slums. He'd gone amongst the poor. He'd lived his life in the interests of others. So that when he died, he was missed. And the street kids, of which there are something like 60,000 in Calcutta, came and cried before the coffin of Uncle Vijayan, the richest poor man. He went out of this world as he came into it. You come in naked. You come in with nothing apart from your life, and you go out in the same way. But what can go before you? The way that you lived your life. The way that, to quote the song that's just been sung, so that all my life in every part is lived to please my Father's heart. So how do you please the heart of God? Here's Jesus, and he's got 12 disciples, 12 students. He doesn't have PowerPoint. He doesn't have a visual aid in terms of an electronic gear. The disciples come to him. You read the story in Matthew's Gospel, and they say to Jesus, "Tell us who is the greatest in the kingdom." And Jesus gets a little kid. And he brings the kid in front of the disciples. And he said, "You know something? If you want to be great, you have to become like this little child." Now, in the earlier session that we had in the first service, I told you that Jesus Christ is radical in his theology. He cuts across the grain. He contradicts what's been accepted culturally. He put value on a woman who was nothing less than a prostitute. And as I demonstrated to the earlier congregation, he used her head and shoulders above all the disciples. You read the story in the 4th chapter of John's Gospel. Jesus is radical. Jesus will go against culture. And in his day, children had no rights. Children had no actual value. On the streets of Rome, they could be abandoned. And today is the same in various parts of the world.
I've
preached in a different country every week for the last 4 weeks. And last week it was Nairobi, in Kenya. 600 kids abandoned every day in Kenya. I was with the former president. I challenged him about the treatment of children. Jesus said that to become a member of his kingdom, you have to become like a child. As though a child has rights. As though a child is important. As though when you minister to a child, you minister to Jesus. Which is exactly what he says in Matthew's Gospel in chapter 18. Not only does he bring a child in front of him and say to the disciples that the childlike faith that this little boy has is a vital qualification for you to enter into the kingdom. But he goes one further. I used to think that Mother Teresa was extreme in her theology of children. She would say that if you took a child out of the rubbish tips of Calcutta, you cleaned the child, you fed the child, you educated the child, you were ministering to Jesus. On my previous visit to Nairobi, I was addressing a huge crowd of people. And right at the back of the auditorium, I can see it now, the doors opened, and a couple of ladies walked down to the front. They got a little child in their arms. This kid had just been found in an African toilet. He was caked in excrement, counted for nothing. Yet they'd washed the child down, put the kid in a blanket, and they left him in my arms. And I challenged the congregation as to how they would respond to this need, which illustrates the needs throughout half Africa. The greatest unreached people's group in the world today is not the Hindus, and there are millions of Hindus. It's not the Muslims, and there are millions of Muslims. The most unreached people's group in the world today is our boys and girls around the world under the age of 16. And Jesus identifies with them in a most remarkable way. He says to his disciples, if you minister to them, you minister to me. How do you please the heart of God? How do you send your righteousness on before you? And one of the answers is, by the way that you minister to those who are in need. And nobody is more in need than a child. Here's a question. It's a stupid question. But then I'm a theological principle, so I can ask stupid questions. How old was Adam when he was born? And the answer is, he wasn't born. Adam was in the peak of manhood when he came on earth. Just like your pastor. Just at the acme of maturity and he came fully fledged. Handsome and intellectual.
That's right.
Perfectly formed.
Perfecta form.
Able to do so many tasks.
För att göra så mycket vimmes.
I'm being serious. This was Adam when he came on earth.
Han kom till jorden.
How old was Jesus when he was born?
Hur gammal var Jesus när han var född?
And the answer is, he was born like you and me.
Sverige, han var född av samma håll som du.
He was born as a babe.
Han var född som ett barn.
Where you were born, you had no choice. Some of you were born in the Faroes. Some in Denmark. I was born in England. But I had no choice. Nobody rang me up on my mobile phone before I came into the world and said, hey Tony, where do you want to be born? Do you want a rich family or a poor family? Do you want to be born in the cold of the Faroe Islands or in the sunshine of the Seychelles?
Inte det var fötter här norr som det kastet där sjur som du har.
Your point of entry into this world is accidental.
Här som du har fötter är inte upp till tiden. Det händer bara.
Jesus was born and within weeks he's a refugee.
Jesus var fötter och att några få veckor är han en flykting.
Jesus was born and he's vulnerable.
Jesus var fötter med den vikaste.
He needs the milk of Mary in order to survive.
Han har bruk för mjölk från mamma sin för att överleva.
He has the same problems as millions of boys and girls throughout our world today. But why did God bring Jesus Christ into the world with the vulnerability of a kid?
Men kvi valde Gud att föra Jesus in i heim vi vägleiten nun som en batten hever.
And the answer is because he wants the Lord to identify with the weakness of the most vulnerable area of human life.
Til han ønsker at Jesus kan identifisera vi te allar vägleiten i livet.
Because no one is more vulnerable than a child. And the only possible exception is an elderly person who has lost their faculties and their ability to earn their own income. And it's Jesus who teaches this. That as you minister to a child, you minister to God. The second miracle that he performed was to a widow woman raising her son from the dead in order to identify with the needs of older people. And when he's on the cross, he arrests the attention of John and he directs John to his mother and he says, John, behold your mother. And he says to Mary, behold your son. He makes provision. He makes provision for the old. He makes provision for the young. And when his half-brother James understands who Jesus is and writes a letter that bears his name, James defines religion. How does he define religion? True religion is this: to defend the needs of the poor, to minister to the needs of the orphan, to minister to the widow, and to keep oneself uncompromised from this world.
And
that's extraordinary. An extraordinary definition of religion. Because that religion which pleases the heart of God is a religion that ministers to those who are in need. Hey Jesus.
Hey Jesus.
Who is the greatest in the kingdom?
Hey Jesus, hvor er størstur í ríkinum?
And Jesus doesn't point to Caesar. He doesn't point to the high priest. He points to a little kid. And he said, he is the greatest. Why? Because a child can do what an adult can't do. In the passing of the years, you tend to become more mistrustful. You tend to become more cynical. But a child has an ability to trust. A child will throw himself into the arms of an adult. I was in Romania after Ceausescu had been killed. I went into the orphanages of Romania. And the kids would be fighting with one another in order to be picked up by adults because they trust adults. Because they want love. It's the simple faith of a child which arrests the attention of Jesus. And he goes further. He says, as you minister to the child, you're ministering to me. But he goes further. He says that if you cause a child to suffer, it would be better that a millstone be hung around your neck and you had never been born.
Next week I'll be in India.
Næsta vika verð ég í Indíu.
We're going to open a home.
Við fara að opna eitt heim.
There are 60,000 kids who live on the streets of Calcutta.
60,000 börn sem lifa í götunum í Calcutta.
One of my students is there.
Ein af mínum nemendum er hér.
We bought a home just a few months ago.
Við keyptum eitt hús fyrir nokkrum árum síðan.
This girl who has graduated will be one of the leaders of the home.
Og hann gentan sem nú er leiðu.
We will give sanctuary to 450 kids. We're one of many groups working on the streets of the cities. What the Assemblies of God is doing blows the mind. And this home is between the two main railway stations. It is infested by paedophiles. There are 1 million children who are forced into the sex industry in Asia every year. And Jesus says, if you offend a child, you offend me. It would be better for you if you had never been born. The astonishing evaluation of Jesus of children in the first century is sensational. If you continue to read the 18th chapter of Matthew's Gospel, you find something else. I don't really understand this, but Jesus said that every child has its angel. As though there is a spiritual watch taken over every child that's born into this world. Jesus refers to their angels in heaven. As though there is a surveillance system from heaven looking down upon children. Now I don't understand it. But I believe it. But sometimes my faith is tested to the very limits. You remember when the tsunami wave broke in the Indian Ocean? The wave came to the beach. It was about 20 feet high. It hit not only the beaches of India, but all the surrounding countries in the Indian basin. I happened to be in India. I picked up a little kid. She had traveled 2 hours in the wave. Her mother had grabbed her as the house had collapsed, as the wave hit the cottage, the fisherman's cottage where she lived. And as I held that little girl, I was asking myself, why, Lord? Why do you allow this sort of thing to happen? Why do you allow a kid to be caked in excrement in Nairobi and brought to one of our meetings? Why is it that kids suffer so much in Darfur, in the Sudan? Why don't you do something? And the answer has to be, He has made it possible for something to be done. So I take you back to Jesus. You minister to a child. You minister to me. As though the responsibility is thrown back to where it belongs, to the people of God, to the children of God. Jesus tells two parables, the most famous stories. You need to link them together. One is in Luke's Gospel in chapter 10. The other is in Luke's Gospel in chapter 18. The most famous story that Jesus told. The prodigal son comes back to the father's house. And then he speaks of the Samaritan who leaves Jerusalem and goes down to Jericho. One comes in. One comes into safety. The other goes out to danger. Who is the Samaritan? It's none other than Jesus.
Det är Jesus.
He's the it's the man that illustrates him. What happens on the Jericho road? A man has been mugged. And the Samaritan sees the man, puts him on his donkey, takes him to the inn, speaks to the innkeeper, and says, look after him. The innkeeper is to work on behalf of the Samaritan. And the Samaritan says, here is the money. Here are the resources. Take care of him. And when I come back, I'll check up on what you did. And if you did more than was expected, I will reward you. How do you understand that? Jesus speaks to the church. He speaks to the needy. He speaks to the child who cannot speak for itself. And he says, take care. Take care of him. Because there are sufficient resources in the world to meet the needs of everybody. If we took all that the Americans and the British have spent in Iraq, and made one sum, one total of the expenditure, we could have fed the world's poor for 10 years. I use the illustration. I use the statistic to demonstrate the fact that God is a God of plenty, but he has not distributed fairly. He has left it within humanity to even out the spread, so to speak. And when you do that, when we're engaged in this, we read the Father's heart of God, we please the Lord by taking what we have and directing it to others who have not, showing interest in more than just a verbal fashion. Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold. You remember the old song? I imagine it's translated into Faroese. How do you send on ahead your righteousness? And the answer is by the way that you live your life. I'm nearly through. If you check that chapter in Matthew's Gospel, how does Jesus finish his teaching on the child? He tells a parable. Jesus repeated himself. Any good preacher will repeat himself, because we forget so soon what we've already learned. And Jesus tells a story of the sheep that goes astray and the shepherd who goes after the sheep. Who is the sheep? He's talking about children. He's talking about children who are threatened. He's talking about children who are endangered. Who goes after the child? The good shepherd. He gives his life for the child. He's speaking about himself. But he's also speaking about his manifesto to the church. What does he want us to do? To evaluate the importance of children. Solomon says in the last chapter of Proverbs, in the 8th and 9th verse, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. I was quite serious about my friend Vijayan. The way that he died, giving his life in the interests of others, and thinking as I did of the verse in Numbers, let me die the death of this man. I've met some of the most wealthy people on earth, certainly in the West,
And I've discovered that sometimes the wealthy are paradoxically so poor. They haven't yet found what is the true core value of life. I was talking to one person just earlier on this year. A turnover of over £800 million a year. Owns a couple of castles. Weeping when she started to tell me about her life. The heartache, the sense of despair, so much potential, seemingly so little achieved, gone through a divorce, son who committed suicide, put all the wealth on one side, she traded it. In order for her life to be regulated properly. I'm not exaggerating. 2 weeks ago, I'm with one of the richest men in Africa, 85 years of age, as much power as Gaddafi, and yet he's facing the future, an uncertain future. I prayed with him. For 5 minutes he hugged me. As I was bringing him and his needs and his family and his country to the Lord, suggesting to him that he still had time. Time what? For what? To look back on his life. To build in the correctives. So that when he stands as my friend Vijayan stands before the Lord, his righteousness has gone on in front of him. We've only 70 or 80 odd years on this world. Some a few more, some a few less. It's a relatively short span on the screen of heaven. And it's what we do in the name of the Lord that we carry forward. See, Jesus couldn't have made it more clear. You minister to a child. You minister to me. Now, just in case the disciples got it wrong, he repeats the lecture as I repeat my lectures to my students. Because some students are dull. None of the Faroese students were ever dull. I just want to sort of make that clear because we'd like to have more Faroese students. But the disciples of Jesus, they were dull. They sometimes failed to understand what he had to say. So he fast tracks to the end of his ministry. And he's repeating the lecture. It's not a child that he's got in front of him. He's thinking of the end time. When people stand before him. And he's saying to them, thank you very much. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was imprisoned, you visited me. When I was sick, you ministered to me. And the disciples are reckoned to say this, Lord, when did we see you sick? When did we see you hungry? When did we see you naked? And Jesus said, and this is phenomenal, inasmuch as you did it to one of these, the least of my brothers. You did it unto me. You see, he's back again. Back again to the child. Back again to the teaching that studs his ministry. Our concerns as Christians. It is not just to have the right doctrine. This world is full of words. It's not the words, it's the deed. It's not just what you believe, it's how you behave. These are so essential. There's a crisis in belief as far as the Christian church is concerned. The crisis is in the world. And the fulcrum is
is the credibility of the church. Who are these people? What are their distinctions? What is the difference between them and us? And it's to the degree that we face that question, react to that question, that we have credibility. I know what I'm talking about. I spend so much time traveling and talking. The cold face of poverty, I'm there so frequently. Then I have to balance that with the affluence of the West and somehow make sense of the teachings of our Lord. I do want to please Him. I do want the Father's heart to be pleased as I reflect what He has done. Your righteousness can go before you. It's a decision that you can make. You can't change the world, but you can change the world for one person. $20 would put a kid through a school in Darfur in Sudan. $60 would put a child through an orphanage in Asia. For 1 month. We can build a school in a slum, and we can staff that school for something like £6,000, $12,000 a year.
Vi kunnu byggja ein skúla og vi kunnu fullsetta við lærarar og fólki fyrir umlei 6000.
We can 6000 pounds, yes, $12,000.
Yeah, 6000 pund um ár.
There are things that we can do.
Tí eru next week kunnu gera.
But it's not just money.
It's
having a world view.
It's
seeing the world as Jesus saw the world. He's the most uncomfortable man to be with. Because, and this is my last comment. He gives you a yardstick by which to measure your own life. As you would that men would do to you, do you also to them? If I was in a slum, what would I want people to do for me? It's a simple question. The answer is not rocket science to find the correct one. We are not owners of anything, we are stewards of all that we possess. And we are answerable to God.